This Black Friday, get 6 months free when you move your WordPress sites to Kinsta. Enjoy faster load times, no stress when traffic spikes, and hosting you can actually count on. We're G2's number one rated host for WordPress. For a reason. Visit kinsta.com/BF. That's KINSTA.com/BF. Don't miss out. Offer ends December 2nd.
Have you tried going back and playing the games you played as a kid?
We're talking nostalgia overload, fun facts, and seeing if we can remember how to beat games we haven't played in 30 years.
Come join us. Retro Recall is all about nostalgia and reliving those years of zero responsibility.
Each episode, John makes me play a game from our youth, and I challenge him to do something in that game, and then the loser has to try one of the worst games ever made.
It's fun, it's terrible, but most of all, it's a look back at simpler times.
In the first episode, we try Double Dragon 2, and let's just say that John is still having nightmares about some of the terrible games he had to play.
You say that, but I'm not the only one. Ghoul School?
Dear God.
Check out Retro Recall on YouTube and your favorite audio podcast platforms.
There are links in the main show description, or just search Retro Recall.
Retro Recall. Come join us. Games are always better with friends.
Retro Recall.
Welcome to the 40K Lorecast.
Welcome to 40K Lorecast with me, John Barsotti, and Brad Chester.
This guy.
In today's cast, we're going to discuss how antibiotics work. Just kidding. Good job, Brad.
I'm fine.
Now.
Ish.
You are so much better than you were, which sounds good, except I know how bad you were.
I would have been able to do the cast. I was right.
Oh, it would have been great. It would have, I think we would have gotten messages. Is this Brad's last cast? That would have been the reviews. The reviews would have been, I'm going to miss Brad.
I mean, also depending on what time we did it, I would have been still at a room.
We probably at some point should do one from the hospital because you're there, what, quarterly?
So, you know, I don't like the tone you're taking with me. I don't like this at all. I don't like the cut of your jib, sir.
We just hear beep. Beep, 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 beep. Hold on, Brad needs a minute.
Must have been talking about the Lords of Terra. Got me all fired up.
Oh, yeah, we could actually hear your actual heartbeat change. All right, anyway. Today, we actually are going to discuss the closing of the Badab War, focusing a lot on once the war broke out and a lot of the kind of discoveries that occurred during it. For those who aren't aware, I hope you are all at this point, the 40K Lorecast, the weekly show in the lore of Warhammer 40K universe, releasing every Monday at 7 p.m. If you like the cast and you want to hear more about it, click on the link. There's also a link to our YouTube page, the 40K Lorecast, that has old episodes of our show that we've done up for video, our live Q&A sessions, and our show, The History of 40K, with Brad and myself and a guest. Also, little announcement, guys. I'm going to go and pull them from the prior episodes. We've had to shelve the Two Old Men and Their Handler for a little bit. There just were some health issues that were coming into play, and we realized there was no way to do the show and actually have a consistent release schedule. So we're going to shelve it till probably 2026 and figure out what we want to do with it there. I apologize. We were super excited about the project, but we just realized we couldn't even produce it biweekly. And that was just going to frustrate people. So our apology. Additionally, in the show notes is a link to our Patreon. Massive thank you to everyone who's contributed already. This is a evolving show, as you can probably guess. And the Patreon really helps us do a lot more with it. For those who haven't joined yet and aren't aware, our Patreon only has one tier. It gives you the show ad-free, and not only the 40K Lorecast, but also the History of 40K. It's $4.99 per month, or let's say you live in a town that's protected by a fire-breathing dragon. Then it's only 4.3 euros per month. You know, because the town of Ghent in Belgium is genuinely gorgeous. And it's under the protection of a fire-breathing dragon. I mean, it's a statue that doesn't really breathe fire, but it's still cool. And I also should mention I haven't been there in 30 years, so I'm hoping it's still pretty. TripAdvisor makes it look that way. But anywho.
Ooh, hold on. I have a dragon story for you on that. Ultimate Brad, ultra nerded up because someone was talking about one of my friends and his wife and a group went on a trip over to Europe and said the exact phrase you just said of fire breathing dragon. And I mistakenly super nerded out. And because she made the joke of what other kind, I don't know why you have to say fire breathing dragon. What other kinds of dragons are there? And I went, meow, let me tell you about all the dragons there are. And then after about 5 minutes, yeah, they're like, yeah, I was like, well, screw it. Now, you know, deal with it. You now have that knowledge.
For those of you who don't know, Ghent is the home for Charles V, who has one of the most epic lower chins I've ever seen. He also married his cousin, but on the other hand, he did rule all of mainland Europe. So there was that. Ghent also has Gravesteen Castle in it, which has a really cool story because it was built in the 12th century in East Flanders. The castle was never conquered until 1949. You might say to yourself, 1949. The war was over in 1949. That's right, because it wasn't conquered by a foreign army. It was conquered by a bunch of college students who were upset about the tax on beer increasing. So they assaulted the castle and stormed it. There was only one guard, and they locked him in a closet. And then they got drunk and threw garbage at the police from the top of the castle walls. And I support this. I think that's a very funny move. Apparently, to this day, on the 6th of November, get up on top of the castle wall, get really drunk, and dance around. So good for you, though, Ghenties.
For you, Flemish. That was a pretty deep dive, man, into something obscure and absolutely no reason.
The thing is, I actually really like Belgium for some strange reason. I've never known why. I find the Flemish to be enjoyable. Not just me. But anywho, last couple of little bits. Discord. We always pump our Discord. We always should pump our Discord. Link in the show notes to it. It has been, it's actually got hot again recently. We've really had a great time in there talking about stuff. Now we even have art in there, but a lot of good discussions about literature, about some of the topics we've been going through, some of the new books that are coming out, even some of the competitive stuff's gotten really good. So for anyone looking for a place to interact around Warhammer, please hop in our Discord. Last little bit though, I have a side project that's going to be releasing later this week. Whenever this is releasing, it'll be on the 17th or 18th of November. It's called Retro Recall. It's a show I'm doing with Tom from Robots Radio, focusing on old gaming. We're talking about specific video games from like 1988 to around 2005. Give it a listen. It should be out there. You'll find it on Spotify, YouTube. It's called Retro Recall. There you go. Anyway, but that's enough of that stuff. I'll stop cheating on Brad now. We'll do my thing with Brad, and we'll talk about the Badab War, which I still haven't looked up if it's Badab or Badab.
But I'm never, even when I know what it actually is pronounced as, I'm not telling you because I enjoy seeing it just blasted in the Discord.
Well, I'm hoping it's one of those ones that it's not phonetic. It's like it's actually pronounced Badoob, John. Damn it. You know, like where I had no chance of beginning it correctly anyway. All right. But let's get where we left off. So we left off. The Badab sector is turning into a full-blown civil war. We've got the Astral Claws, the Mantis Warriors, the Lamenters, and now the Executioners have all declared independence from the Imperium. Not seceded.
I was about to say, they didn't secede, which apparently is different, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, these guys were playing. I'd like that GW wrote a story about someone enforcing rules as written.
Yeah,
it's their ultimate nightmare anyway. So that's what they do. Rules is written. We are not seceding. We're just declaring an independent kingdom within the Imperium where we are going to manage this whole Maelstrom sector, and we're going to make it align with the needs of the Imperium. Problem is, in doing this, they got in direct conflict with the Firehawks and the Marines Errant. A conflict broke out. The two were fighting, and the Marines, the Firehawks, had to unfortunately retreat pretty quickly because it wasn't going well for them. In response,
I feel like wasn't going well is a wild understatement, John, where we left the cast last week.
Yeah, they were being pursued actively and they were probably all going to die.
We had a couple snafus in putting the code in. You're like, no, man. Like, the stuff was blowing out. You had to do the Bill Paxton from Aliens. I don't know if you keep it score, man. We just got our asses kicked.
Yeah. Maybe six and a half dozen of the other. So obviously this now has come to the attention of the Lords of Terra. The Lords of Terra ordered the Red Scorpions, Raptors, Fire Angels, and Salamanders out there. They also held the Trade Federation, the Cathargos, totally responsible for the entire thing and said this is entirely their fault because we don't want anyone knowing that Space Marines can turn against the Imperium. But the more important piece is what was going on behind the scenes. Behind the scenes, Inquisitor Jarndyce, Frayne is the last name, we're going with that one, was put in to oversee the situation. And Inquisitor Frayne moved to immediately try to quell the rebellion. A combo, classic Imperium, combo of diplomacy and force. First, he put a call out to all the Space Marines in the region saying, come support this, the Imperium needs you. What's interesting about that, though, and I do like this, is that he, as the inquisitorial agent, had the authority to command any part of the Imperial military, including the Astartes. But what he did was he actually deferred all of his stuff through the chapter master of the Red Scorpions, who was given the title High Lord Commander in the region. And this is because, as we've said before, the Space Marines are part of the Imperium. The Space Marines report to the Imperium. But the Space Marines, if they choose not to, the Imperium really doesn't want to deal with that. So they have to ask very nicely. And speaking of asking nicely, he then very nicely asked the secessionists to stand down on their hostility and submit themselves to judgment by the Inquisition, to which they said no.
What?
Horus Heresy, no. But again, it was that rules as written thing. Politely said no. Luft Huron, who's the leading the secessionists, knew the politics, and more importantly, he knew the law. And he knew that if he surrendered to judgment, everyone's dead.
Dead.
Just kill all of us.
Yeah, sir.
Immediately
sir,
dead.
Inquisition always wonders why no one's ever giving up to them. Because you all die if you give up to the Inquisition.
Yeah. So what he did, which was kind of clever, is he kept playing the victim. He said, I can't lay down my arms because I'm under assault. And pointing out, accurately, by the way, that the Firehawks had been like exterminatizing systems in the area. And I mean, the Firehawks were doing this because the Mantis warriors did that to them. But, you know, this is how you play a victim. So Huron is saying, look, if I try to submit, these guys are just going to kill me. So the only way I'm going to submit is if you pull all your forces out of the sector, to which the Inquisition was like, yeah, we're not doing that. Now, this progresses quickly, if I'm being honest. So first and foremost, you've got the Ring of Steel, which we talked about in the last cast. Huron, when he declared his independence and stopped paying the Imperial tithe, he wasn't doing it to build himself a massive palace or accumulate a lot of wealth. He was doing it actually to increase the size of his military capabilities. So arming himself, arming the defenses of Badab. And one of the things he did was in the actual Badab system was built the Ring of Steel. And it's just this collection of orbital defense and fortified naval stations, which could mount an almost insurmountable defense.
I was going to say, it's a huge, huge structures out in space. Like they're, he's got the Ring of Steel is no joke. Also, he wasn't just trying to build his military. He was trying to put down that sector. He was trying to completely placate all other forces.
He did have up until fairly late in this war. Well, I mean, it's dependable, actually, but it appeared at least for a while that Huron's goal was to build up a military force and actually pacify the Maelstrom sector. This was, again, it didn't really seem till much later there was anything selfish in it. And even later, he still is trying to put down any rebellions in the Maelstrom sector. He's just doing it from a different perspective.
I'm going to sprinkle this in and we'll continue on. At what point in time did he actually first get contacted by Chaos? And it's way before he thought it was. Yeah.
Yeah. That's how all Chaos is.
I'm just saying, yeah.
Turn to Chaos well after they turned to Chaos.
Yeah.
That's kind of the beauty of
Chaos. I mean, there's a point where he just renames himself and everything else, but I mean.
But that's a lot later.
No, but I think that, I actually think that early on, because he gets the whole hubris of, I can take over this sector and everything else. These are all good things, air quotes, which I'm doing as usual, even though no one can see me except for John. But
it's the system.
But I thought about this a lot when I went in to reread the Badab Wars and stuff like that. And I was just like, man, I feel like sometimes they do, and I encourage people to read these because they were really fun, but I think they do a really good job, and I think the chaos gods do a great job of luring people in on their own. They give them the very subtle invite and make them make the leap into where they don't even realize, hey man, you're in the middle of the lake. You're not, you don't have a toe in the water. You're deep in here and you never even knew you got wet. I get the very feel on this because the tone shifts at some point in time in the books, but like for a very long time, he's righteous. He wants to do these things for the Imperium. He wants to conquer for the Imperium. And then it slowly shifts to, man, I'm still doing this for the Imperium, but I wish I got some support. And then it's the Imperium's fault that I'm not succeeding.
There it is. Yeah. And there are some moments like the third year of the war, though, where I think they start seeing like almost chaos style mutants being.
It's a little. And then he makes a lot of you see this in a lot of the villains that people will cover. Go ahead.
What I was going to say, we're jumping ahead a little bit, but there actually is a point where he is fighting against chaos and the Imperium in the sector. And we'll get there.
Right. I wanted to talk about it before we got into it, because later on, he's obviously.
You want to spoil it? It's just like, hey, guys, screw you. Surprise.
No, but I want to set up the fact that where his head's at, because this entire engagement started from what he thought was a very good place, a very noble place.
Yeah. I mean,
even at this point, I still think that's the point. Well, no, I don't, but I'm saying in his mind, I think he feels he's the wronged person. He is wrong, but he thinks
everyone who goes to the chaos feels that way. I would argue that at this point,
a lot of them aren't wrong. Okay. But go ahead.
Yeah. So let's get into it. So effectively, the problem with the Imperium has is they arrive in the sector. The Badab, which is where they have to get to, has this ring of steel around it. They can't even go near it. But even the sector itself is pretty well fortified. So the ring of steel is just the Badab sector. But beyond that, they have fortified, they've built up planets. And so what the Imperium does is they arrive, and the first thing they do is surround the entire subsystem, for lack of a
word. Well, let me show you
no one's going in and out.
Let me tell you what this blockade does. Carry the one, absolutely nothing but self-sufficient. It's
because the entire subsector is self-sufficient. Yeah. They have forge worlds in there we're going to skip this bit a little bit because the story's a little bit wild, but the Admech was still trading with them because since they were never labeled heretics, the Admech are not barred from trading with them, and Huron and the guys do have good goods to trade. So it's this wild bit of a side story for Admech.
I was going to say two points on that. One, they were self-sufficient. Two, world's worst blockade because they were trading with multiple other people outside of the sector.
Yeah.
You're like, what are you even, but like you pretending? Do I have to give like the secret hand wave as I blew by you with my goods? Like they were doing nothing.
Once they get there, though, the Imperium decide to go for it. I'm not even sure if it's the Imperium or just the Space Marines themselves, because the problem is that where the Imperium hasn't labeled Huron and the others as heretics, the Space Marines who've arrived have. And Space Marines hate two things more than anything, a heretic and a heretic. That's it. Xenos are an issue, but that's fine. Heretics are what they really care about. So the Imperial forces begin attacking the worlds in this sector with just impunity. They're not trying to conquer them. They're just trying to teach a lesson, and they are wiping worlds out. The problem with it, though, is that while they're wiping worlds out, they're also discovering how well defended all said worlds are. Because yes, they're wiping a world out, but not without casualties. And what you're getting now is massive defenses coming back, and on what looked like on paper to be a really easy victory for the Space Marines is turning into a slow slog very quickly, because even the human defenders are putting up.
And I was about to put out the fact of, exactly that. You're putting up a slow slog and you haven't actually hit the real defenses yet.
And so the Imperium needs to start changing their tactics as they're getting further and further into this, because they are successfully raging at these outer worlds. But while they're doing it, the secessionists are, instead of fighting them on the outer worlds are now going into the inner worlds, the ones who hadn't come over to their cause, and in effect conquering them. So while the outer worlds of the system are falling, they're not as significant as the inner worlds would be for trade and support. So as this war is progressing, Huron's actually getting stronger.
I love that point on that, though, because Huron actually gains worlds that he didn't have by the Imperium trying to basically go, "Well, they're teaching you a lesson out here in these outer planets. Cool." Yeah. And he's like, "Well, you now have to join me or you're going, this is going to happen to you." And so a bunch of these places that have no desire to be part of him, all of a sudden are now they're pulled in. Yeah. And so he's playing tower defense a lot better than they were.
Yeah. And so what ends up happening is the war by 906, like a year, 2 years into the war basically hits like a stalemate. We're not talking World War One trench warfare stalemate, but just this level of like, all right, there's really no gains. It is World War One trench warfare stalemate, actually. This is basically 1916, where you just can't go anywhere because any ground you gain, you lose so much in gaining it, and it's just not really worth anything. But then out of nowhere.
I was just about to say, we should probably point out that there's a lot of other stuff going on.
Yeah, and this becomes a problem for the Imperium. The Imperium has two things working against it as far as really dealing with Badab War. One is they don't want to acknowledge that they have a Space Marine Civil War happening. But more importantly, they don't really have the resources for it. It's 906 of M41. So Tyranids are here. Necrons are awakening. Orcs are everywhere at this stage. You have Drukhari are at one of their strongest points because we're post-vectorizing. And then you have just the normal problem of being the Imperium, which is rebellions and chaos and everything else.
Well, chaos is not even the normal right now. Chaos is mid-13th Crusade.
Yeah. I think 13th is later than... I think 940 is 13th Black Crusade, but you've still
It's coming up. Yeah. We had all the free stuff. Chaos is present. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Chaos is very present.
I'm saying, right before the 13th Crusade, it wasn't like nothing was going down. You know?
They weren't hanging out. It was like, this is lovely. They're not just like sipping tea and enjoying themselves.
And you also had a real problem with the Eldar at the time, too, because all the seers were trying to position all their craft worlds in places to stop different chaos things. So again, they're a problem for the Imperium, right about the time a craft world parks right outside what you're in charge of. You're like, hey man.
And decides the planet that you're on would be better if it didn't exist because it'll help against the rise of chaos. Yeah, right. not ideal. But then the war takes this crazy turn. Parley, out of nowhere, Huron reaches out to the loyalists himself, offering a temporary ceasefire and a parley. And he says, look, hey, further bloodshed is not good for any of us. This is all really based on a misunderstanding. Let's get together and figure it out, you know, like an adult would. And I like this story because Lord High Commander Ortis, who's the commander of the Red Scorpion, says, absolutely. Let's get this done. And Inquisitor Frayn goes, are you an idiot? Do not go there. This is 100% a terrible idea.
You had so many opportunities, John, to say, it's a trap.
Well, to be fair, it wasn't a trap. It was just a stupid idea. But the problem is Space Marines are going to Space Marine. The Space Marines sit there and say, this other Space Marine wants to have a noble conversation. We should go have a noble conversation. And in the history of 40K lore, there are no times that a traitor Space Marine has offered a parley and it hasn't turned out to be a terrible idea. Maybe there's one that I'm just not thinking of, but usually it goes the way it's going
to
go. Now,
all right, here's my thing. I'm not going to go parley with the people I'm fighting against in a system called the grief system and hope that nothing bad happens.
That's the best part. No, it wasn't just the grief system. So they decided to meet on a abandoned way station orbiting a gas giant in the grief system. So it's an abandoned station in an abandoned system orbiting an uninhabitable planet in a system named after sorrow and trouble.
I just assume an entire film crew was sitting here at the time going, no, we're not filming We're filming just to record this. It's definitely not going to be a giant action movie in about 10 minutes here.
Jesus. So the meeting opens up and it's just yelling. Huron comes in there screaming and ranting about how he and his secessionists are not traitors. They're loyalists, but they've been betrayed by the Imperium. And not the Lords of Terror themselves, but the Adeptus Administratum, which, to be fair, everyone hates the Adeptus Administratum. So it's like blaming the healthcare industry. Oh, it's insurance companies.
He's a shitty dude. But at this point in time, when he said this, he does give a 2-page impassioned speech that is 100% correct.
Yeah. Oh, he practiced. This was PowerPointed well. Let's call a spade a spade. Lord Commander Ordis holds the line, stating that all the things you're saying, they're fine and dandy, but hostilities have to end. Huron and his allies have to lay down their arms, and they have to subject themselves for judgment. Hours go by, all this yelling, and everyone agrees this isn't working, and they go back to their, like, chambers to rest. That's what's written. It's a stupid phrase. But anyway, you'll never guess what happened next. So out of nowhere, 3 unknown vessels come hurtling out of the gas giant after cutting off all communication to the platform. The vessels then blanket the station and the Imperial and secessionist fleets with just firepower. And they dock, and a bunch of heretics, mutants, and chaos marines come flooding out, attacking both sides, which is important here. And I just want to take a quick note to point out, in the 41st millennia, radar doesn't seem to work. Because this is in every GW story, multiple ships can always avoid detection and wreak havoc. We had it in Flight of the Eisenstein, where a small ship just flew in front of a battle cruiser and went, "Nothing to see here, guys." And the battle cruiser went, "Yep, I'll just let that happen." We have numerous times during the Horus Heresy, there's stories that involve
all the space
wolves.
The entirety of
nonstop.
Yes. You're going to think Thousand Suns and the Space Wolves. We went over to Prospero, all that kind of stuff.
Every single time. Anyway, sorry. It just drives me insane. But the big scrum breaks out, and both sides kind of, it's this weird moment where both sides come together to fight the invaders and then decide that's not cool. And they just start fighting each other. So it becomes a 3-way war where everyone's fighting 2 different people at the same time. During the battle, Chapter Master Sartak of the Mantis Warriors is killed, and Lord Commander Ortis of the Red Scorpions dies. And cool story, if you want to read it, it's cool, where the chief librarian of the Red Scorpions makes a name for himself. He, like, musters the troops, and he single-handedly leads this counterattack and grabs this chapter master and brings him back.
He also puts up a force shield and, like, neos a bunch of bolts.
Yeah. This is pretty cool. Oh, I should have mentioned, by the way, if you guys want to know more about this, this is not a novel. You have to get the books. It's 2 of the Imperial Armors. I think it's 9 and 10 or 8 and 9. Let's just say they're not available in print anymore. You can't buy them in a store, but I mean, you could, you shouldn't Google, you know, Imperial Armor Compendium 9 PDF. That would be wrong, and that would be stealing. So don't do that, because if you did it, there would not be a result.
And there's no way that I currently have that up on my computer screen, but don't worry about it.
Yeah, you should definitely do that, because it would be an IP violation. So please do not Google Imperial Armor Compendium 9 PDF. Would be a mistake. Anyway, Huron escapes and leads back. And this Inquisitor, so it ends. And what's interesting is that post Inquisitor Frayn has to figure out what just happened, because it's a little bit odd. We saw that his viewpoint is, first, he decides this is all because forces of chaos, and because they're enemies of the Imperium, want this war to continue. So therefore, they probably were lying in wait in an effort to prevent any sort of peace treaty. You know, that we've seen that in movies a lot of times. But then Frayn starts to realize that doesn't really make a lot of sense. And he looks at a really key detail there, which is that maybe Huron did all this, because the chapter master of the Mantis Warriors was there for no apparent reason, and he died. The chapter masters and the Lamenters and the Executioners were not there. So why the Mantis Warriors? And the reason why is because the Mantis Warriors were part of the original secession. They agreed, we want to pacify Maelstrom. We want to do all these things. But the Mantis Warriors were also sitting there saying, well, I'm actually fighting now not against the enemies of the Imperium within the Maelstrom. I'm fighting against other Astartes. And this is
not
real
cool,
issue.
Man.
But if Huron, which is what he does, by the way, tells the Mantis warriors, hey, your chapter master died because the Inquisition are behind the Chaos Attack, which, by the way, is something the Inquisition would 100% do, for the record. The Inquisition has no problem steering Chaos to go kill enemies of the Imperium. No issue with that whatsoever.
Let's say, they've done it before. They'll probably do it again.
Exactly. And so what Frayn realizes is that this was all a ploy by Huron. He needed the Mantis warriors to align with him much better than they were. So his opinion was that Huron was behind the Chaos Attack. He left the head of the Mantis warriors available. Therefore, the head of the Mantis warriors dies. And now the Mantis warriors are perfectly aligned with Huron to help continue fighting this war. So from there, we now have a problem. And the problem we have is this war is about to get a lot worse. The Imperium goes through. They select a new, what happens is the Imperial forces go through. They lost their Lord High Commander. They make a new one. There's a whole bit in there about the Firehawks being upset. It wasn't one of their guys. The Firehawks could not have one of their guys take it on because the Firehawks do Votan level grudges. You don't want that in your Lord High Commander. So the next one is also a Red Scorpion. Not really important, but it's there. The bigger piece that's important next is the failure of the parley means they need more troops. The Imperium realizes this is going to be a war. They're not going to be able to negotiate their way through it, and they don't have enough stuff. So they bring in two more groups, the Nova Marines, an Ultramarines successor, and the Sons of Medusa, who are an Iron Hand successor and a very cool paint scheme. I think actually Sons of Medusa are cooler than Iron Hands. Anyway, the new Lord High Commander is a guy named Carib Culn. There's no I in it. It's C-U-L-N-N. It is not easy for me to pronounce that. Culn deploys
doing
forces.
So well today, buddy.
Oh, it's rough, man. Some of these ones. It's weird. The Eldar casts are easier. The Imperium casts are what rip my brain to shreds of these things. So, anywho, new Lord High Commander decides, all right, we're going to just squeeze them. We're going to isolate the defenders. We're going to basically start conquesting their forces and try to whittle them down. Because in his opinion, look, it's 7 chapters on our side to 4 chapters on their side. So we've got them outnumbered. At least we should have them outnumbered. Except, and we'll get to that in a second.
Except it doesn't.
Yeah. The Imperium's new plan is, in effect, F it, we ball. They begin attacking all the defenses of the secessionists everywhere. And it goes as you'd expect.
Hold on. Because this is... Oh, I got to get my chi together on this one. This is so stupid. Instead of putting on their boots of mighty ass-kicking, they put on their hats of mighty dumb. Because this is such a terrible plan. They spread out and attack all of the defenses at once.
I have a great analogy for this. It's like, you know how the Juggernaut puts his head down and runs through a bunch of walls? That's what they were doing, except they weren't the Juggernaut. They were just running headfirst into walls.
But it wasn't even like they were just...
Screw this wall.
I coach this game. Attack and destroy a flank. Literally, they just kind of went, how about if we just throw our forces willy-nilly at all of their defenses? Because we're going to destroy them all.
Analogy. They actually do exactly what I do when I play on the tabletop if I want to annoy you about what I just did.
Just pisses
this is,
me off.
For those who don't know, Brad loves to coach me, and he'll give me some really good advice, and I will look him dead in the eye and say, I'm not going to do any of that. I'm going to go do it my way. And then if my way works, I have to watch sad Brad.
So dumb. My pure...
What the dice will just take care of you. But anyway...
So ridiculous.
We'll be right back after a quick break. The countdown is on. Holiday shopping season is officially here. Uncommon Goods takes the stress out of gifting with thousands of unique, high-quality finds you won't see anywhere else. Add some personalization to your holiday shopping with Uncommon Goods. Did I go and buy Fart Bingo? Yeah. Is it for my kid and his friends? Meh. At the same time, I also got a cocktail smoker. So actually, yeah, those are all for me. But that's what's great about Uncommon Goods. They have an uncommon,
get it? Collection of items you can choose from, allowing you to pick up a fun variety of items for your holiday season. Additionally, holidays get expensive. Uncommon Goods is not some super high-cost independent store, which is code for overpriced. Rather, they have a great collection of gifts you can get at a low cost without looking like cheap garbage. So, shop early, have fun, and cross some names off your list today. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/40klore. That's uncommongoods.com/40klore for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary. 40K Lorecast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are all things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates. Potential savings may vary. Not available in all states or situations. What happens next is important, though, because this whole reason that they were doing this style of we'll just attack them all over the place and we'll do all these things is because they felt they had this 7-4 advantage. What happens is the death tolls start to mount. The secessionists keep holding out, namely the Astral Claws. And the Imperium, they have records. They know they're killing these guys. And they just, but they still, they keep coming. And this is where this whole war flips from pseudo-civil war to crusade, basically. One of the apothecaries of the Astral Claws has been captured and he's being interrogated. And I will say, when we say interrogated, we're not doing good cop, bad cop. We're doing Cisneros and Torquemada at the exact same time. You know? And this Astral Claw apothecary admits he's not an Astral Claw. He's a Tiger Claw. This is my little history of 40K fun note here. The story of the War of Badab is 300 pages in Imperial Armor 9 and 10. Okay? But it actually first appears in a book called the Warhammer 40K Compendium, which was released in 1989. So Rogue Trader, we're not even, this is before second edition. So at this point, Warhammer was a D20, D6, D10, D12 game. It was also after Brett had graduated high school.
True story.
Yep.
And I, you know what? I'm going to stand at the defense of this because John's notes say every rose has its thorn. Was garbage, my friend. I will defend Poison and all the hair bands.
No, this is terrible. So this is the same year that gave us Every Rose Has Its Thorn, Blame It on the Rain, Straight Up and Tell Me If You Love Me. I don't know. It was just
garbage. Paul Abdul. Blame It on the Rain was Milli Vanilli.
Garbage. So instead, we're going to use the lore from the Imperium Armor.
Oh, tell me the 2010 one.
2010, TikTok, which is a song, apparently. OMG, no idea. What's My Name from Eminem? I've heard of that song. I can actually quote music I like, but I'm going to skip that. All right, that was all also mostly. It's in general, the music's usually just. But anyway, Tiger Claws. Tiger Claws are a successor of the Astral Claws. In 280 of M40, the entire chapter disappears into the warp. They don't say why. They're all gone, and the Imperium marks them as a lost chapter. Apparently, they reemerged in 680, so a little over, right about 400 years later, a single strike cruiser reappears in the Materium with about 100 Marines on it, and they thought they'd only been gone for a couple months. So really solid Event Horizon type scenario here without the holding of the eyeballs thing. Their captain at the time, the story is, went back to Terra to ask for their gene seed. So he's like, hey, we're here. We are still loyal. We want to rebuild our chapter. He never got there. What did happen was Huron found them, and he began folding them into his own legion, taking in, adding the Tiger Claws into his Astral Claws. And when I say folding them in, I don't mean he would put the Tiger Claws as like one like chapter within his chapter. He actually would take like one Tiger Claw and put it with a squad over there, another one with a squad over there, actually spread them all the way out. And
you know what? Pause on this, because we're talking about the intergalactic bad ideas that have been happening. This one is so crazy because you just took the entire crew from Event Horizon and just went, You guys will probably, you guys look well balanced. I'll just put one of you everywhere and see what happens. These guys just spent 400 years in the warp. Let's just, nobody even ask him any questions. Sling him back into service. Don't even follow up and see if anything's happening. This may sound like a joke. That's exactly what happens.
Yeah. And this is all coming from the guy who on numerous casts tried to defend Warrior Lodges to me.
Warrior Lodges are great. Nothing but success. Kobe, swoosh. Nothing but net, baby.
Oh, God. Yeah, so this becomes a bit of an issue. Huron and the Tire Claws are spreading and dispersing the Legion all around. And this is what was clever about this is it makes it hard to keep track of the size of the Legion. So by spreading them around, and don't forget they're at war, this has a bit of a Black Templar-esque effect to it, where we don't know how many Black Templars there are. We're pretty sure it's over 100,000. And making them the largest legion in the entire galaxy. And they're not a legion. They're a chapter. So, oopsies. That's what occurs here. And at the same time, though, the Tiger Claws and the Astro Claws are replicating quickly. They are doing as much marine gene seed, whatever you call it.
Shenanigans.
Yeah. And so what happens is this large, the Astro Claws end up sitting around 3,500 Marines, which is 3.5 full chapters. So this whole 7-4 advantage that the Imperium thought they had was actually a 7-7 tie. And when you're talking about warfare, the defenders almost always have the advantage. Well, so if you're even...
Be technical, it's a 7.5-7.
Yes, you're right. It's a 7.5-7, and the 7.5 are heavily fortified, making this whole thing a rough. So now the Inquisition discovers this and everything flips on its head. This is now heresy. Good news about heresy is when you find heresy, a lot more forces can be deployed because this is no longer misunderstanding.
Hats go on backwards. Things start going down.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. So, yeah. This is the, when you're playing video games, this is the lean forward moment with playing a video game. Like, yeah, we're doing this. Inquisitor Frayn puts out the call and says, we need more. What happens is, importantly, is who shows up to this call. The first one, and guys, I promise we're going to do a cast on them because I will be probably upcoming fairly soon, is the Minotaurs. And the Minotaurs are, the Minotaurs are people you don't want showing up. Because
they're the anti-space breed space breeds.
Yeah, the Minotaurs are super cool, and we're going to do a cast of them because they're super cool. They are a fully fleet-based space marine legion. They have no founding chapter. They have no founding date. Not because they don't have those, because it's so locked away that even the Inquisition doesn't know who these guys are. And by the way, when we say locked away, I mean the actual locked away, not the usual GW locked away. Like, it's an incredible secret, but here's 42 pages on the secret, fully detailing all of it. We actually don't know them. Those are one of the cool mystery chapters, and they don't suffer any fools.
They're not talkers either.
No, they wage a brutal style of warfare. They're effectively the First Legion. If you really want to dive into what they are the modern 40K version of where the Dark Angels originally were, which makes sense when you realize that they may have a direct tie to the Lords of Terra.
They 100% have a direct tie to the Lords of Terra.
We don't know how the tie works.
Sure, they did.
Yeah.
Which means I don't like them that much.
But what happens next is the Minotaurs decide to treat the secessionists the way Vesuvius treated the people of Pompeii. This was
so made the soil fertile.
Yeah, it's a great wine country. It is some amazing wine right now, but that's the side note. But they come hurtling into the system, calling ahead to the Imperial Force, saying, whose ass do we kick first? And that's what they do. I will say some of the asses they kicked were totally independent worlds who were just between where the Minotaurs were and where the Minotaurs were going. If you've never seen the Family Guy Roadhouse. That's kind of that's how the Minotaurs is just yelling Roadhouse and running through a system. It is brutal, by the way. I mean, they come in, they hit some secessionist holdings, just full-blown exterminatising the planets. Under the guise of the concern that heresy had spread, they label every world in the Badab sector as heretical and just start going, well, they're all heretics, so
This is why we're eventually going to do a cast on them, because I was doing research on these guys just the other day because I knew we were going to bring them up. And this isn't like the time they did this. This is... they're just modus operandi. This is
100%.
What they knew.
They weren't caught in a bad day. This was literally
they flipped open the manual and went, all right, page one looks like collateral damage. Is that the whole page one? Yeah, just kill everybody, man. It's all good.
Kill everything. To the point where other chapters have always steered clear of the Minotaurs because they know when they get going, they'll just blow your ship up too if you're in the way. So what ends up happening is Commander Cullen had to put the Minotaurs in the southern bit, or the bottom bit, as I like to call it, and just say, hey, guys, go ham down there because I can't have you near the rest of the forces because you keep taking out loyalists while you're at it. And so the Minotaurs are just having the time of their lives, just going nuts. And then they run into the Executioners. And the Executioners have a very similar style. They like hardcore melee combat. They're both effectively Black Templar in the way that they want to wage war. Like, if you hit me, I hit you. Like, it's the old, it's Don Fry versus, I forget the guy's name.
Oh my God, that was the greatest fight of all time.
That's what these two end up doing. If you've ever seen Looney Tunes, when a fight breaks out, there's just a big dust cloud.
Dust cloud and whirlwind.
Yeah, the Minotaurs and the Executioners just start doing that to each other. While this is going on, though, this level of conflict in a sector starts bringing attention. And the first one it brings is orcs. So out of nowhere, an orc invasion occurs also in the sector. Not even organized, just all over the place.
Let's clip that again because we really glossed over that with a quickness. A year passes in this fighting. So it's not like these guys didn't show up and like we had a Donnybrook and everything was done. No, this is a year of aggression, like hardcore aggression.
And so the orcs say, good fighting over here, and they show up to both fight and to loot. They're two favorite things. More importantly, and this is what's interesting, chaos. So any level of conflict will draw the attention of the Dark Gods. Suddenly, within the secessionist rebellion, this wasn't on the external, inside the secessionist held territories, you start seeing heretics. And I think this is really fascinating because, as we said later, I'll admit it, Huron becomes Huron Blackheart. He becomes a Chaos Lord later. But we don't know when that happens. And what's interesting is that these Chaos forces appear and they begin attacking Huron's forces. So it's this question of, was he at Chaos at this point? Most likely this is Chaos trying to move him over to them. Like, all right, we went wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Now let's shove him off the cliff and let's get going. But this whole conflict now becomes, like all GW conflicts, multifaceted, multi-party. Now, all of this gets a lot nastier in 908 of M41. So this is the third year of the conflict. The Lamenters chapter are basically preparing themselves for an attack on Imperial forces. The Minotaurs find out about it and attack the fleet themselves. And in basically a day of fighting, nonstop fighting, the Minotaurs subdue the Lamenters. They accept their surrender of the 100 left. They didn't start at that.
Which I'm still actually surprised that the Minotaurs had prisoners in the first place, but continue.
That's a fair point. And they put them back and they say, okay, you guys will be judged when the war is over, which we'll get to later. One of the cool things they did was, as they captured people, they didn't judge them at that moment in time. They were like, all right, let's get to the absolute bottom of what's going on. We're probably going to execute all of you, but let's just make sure. Now, this is big, because now they are down a chapter. And the loss of one of their allies, the secessionists, start to go on the back foot. They have to move into more of a guerrilla tactic style war because they have to whittle away at the Imperium now.
Yeah.
Huron
starts to get pretty down and dirty.
This is where he becomes more evidently chaos.
He also starts earning his name of the Tyrant of Badab in this. because anybody that isn't with him or even mentions like two guys in a coffee shop say we might not support this war, he just starts blowing everybody up because he goes, I don't want, he does scorched earth, but scorched earth with full planets.
Yeah, and this becomes a huge issue for all the planets there because you have Huron saying, you're going to submit to me. And if you don't submit to me, I'm going to burn your planet to the ground. And they go, maybe the Imperium will come save us. But the issue is the Imperium is also burning planets out there.
To the ground.
Yeah. And all this comes, so a good example of this is the world of Galen. And this world had done nothing wrong. It just happened to be in between these two forces. The Space Marine Legions were fighting the secessionists on this planet a number of times throughout the war. The planet was strategically valuable. It wasn't so much a resource thing. It was just a base of operations, etc. And so the populace itself were just like, F this noise. And they were nomadic. Just they bailed on all the cities, just kind of wandering around to just try to avoid the Space Marines. The Sons of Medusa said, all right, go to this planet and claim it for the Imperium once and for all. And the Sons of Medusa just decide, no problem, boss. I got this.
But let's give it what's going on. Let's talk about what they were actually said to do. Get the planet back into compliance. Basically, get everybody back in the Imperium. How do they think the best way to do this? Let's lead a stealth murder campaign across the entire planet.
I would say you use the word stealth. They were jumping down in, what jumping? They were using drop pods to go down there and then wandering around with chainswords, just killing everybody.
It was stealthy for the Marines. But they were showing up places. I mean, you're wandering through a plane doing a whole lot of nothing with your group of people.
But the part I find funny about this is the final outcome then is they subjugate the planet and then they turn the entire planet into a penal colony. And they saying everyone on this planet and all of your offspring forever are just going to work for the Imperium in this penal colony because your planet was kind of near the secessionists.
Yeah.
And hey, man, sounds bad.
Wait for it. It gets weird. Oh, wait, there's more.
Oh, it's so much worse. Then we get to 9-10 of M41, in which case a fleet arrives on the edge of the conflict using, and this is what they say, an ancient but still valid Imperial code. They are there to offer support and aid the Imperial forces. It's the Carcharodons, which means things are about to suck for the secessionists.
And not just suck, but it's going to suck. And it's going to be real up close and personal when it sucks, because that's what the Carcharodons do.
And what I like, though, of this bit is that the Force Commander Tiberius presents himself to Inquisitor Frayn with these writs and titles showing that, look, we have a right to fight with the Imperium, so we're here to fight with the Imperium.
Ancient
and Frayn is looking at these things, showing like, hey, man, the signature on this, I've heard of this guy because I read about him in a book because he's been dead for 5,000 years. Like, but it's legitimate to the point where I could actually imagine Frayn just saying, hey, can I keep this for a minute? Because this is actually kind of a cool artifact. Frayn then presents the Carcharodons to Cullen, the high commander, and he vouches for him, saying, look, all their paperwork checks out. They're good. And Cullen's like, all right, well, thanks for the assist, but I've never even heard of you guys before. So I'm going to have you go over there. And by over there, he means Mantis Warriors. And the Mantis Warriors are very good at guerrilla warfare. And they've been making Badab into just this horrible killing field. Every chapter enters the Mantis Warrior section, get pinned down and take massive losses to really no gain. And he goes, cool, just you weird. Because remember, the Carcharodons look weird. They've got black eyes. They speak in a whisper. It's like, look, you guys give me the willies, for lack of a better phrase. You go deal with this crap, and if you all die, I don't really care.
I love this planning, though. So the Mantis Warriors are fighting this total guerrilla warfare. You can't pin them down because they just don't try to hold any ground. But anybody tries to take their crown, they kill them, and then they leave. And they're not fortified. They're not making defenses. The Carcharodons go, I got a great plan, boss. What we're going to do is murder everybody. Take slaves and just draw the Mantis Warriors out by just being the damn worst ever.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, guys. The space sharks are so awful.
Yeah, they effectively do a chaos-style invasion where they go and say, every world here, we're just going to either, everyone on this world dies or is our slave now. And they do this multiple wars. So the Mantis warriors are like, screw this crap, we're putting this down. But the problem for the Mantis warriors is that they're nowhere near full strength. And the Carcharodons are at absolute full strength. So the Mantis warriors go into this rapid strike and fade, but the Carcharodons do too. And it's pretty quickly before the Carcharodons just turn the tide and effectively, they don't wipe out the Mantis warriors, but they bring their numbers down so low that the Mantis warriors no longer matter for the rest of the war. And so the Mantis warriors are now out, and the Carcharodons then get deployed to the Badab sector. And again, just here, go ravage worlds over there. And the irony is that this whole thing they just did here, where they were wiping out worlds and taking slaves, is not the thing they're most known for from this conflict.
Yeah.
We'll get to that.
Look, man, you just, they didn't want to pull a hammy before they really got to the atrocities.
Oh, God. So the next big part of the war is on the world of Shaprius, whatever. It's a feral world that orbits a binary star, which means it's two stars. And this doesn't work, by the way, but as far as being habitable, because I mean, this is just all gravity challenges. But the salamanders approach a secessionist world and they find it just a nightmare. Right above the world is this weird hodgepodge style fleet that's just scavenging vessels and building this thing up. On the world below, they can, in this case, their scanners worked because they always work or don't work. There's no middle ground, by the way. And they can actually
scan all the way back to Terra or can't see 10 feet. Got it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, why would we have windows? It worked against the Geth. But so they scan down and like the feral people of the world are being outfitted for war. Not like, hey, I gave them a pointier spear. They're getting injections. They are turning into super warriors. And so they make a call out and the salamanders and the minotaurs attack this world because they recognize this is basically chaos. As soon as they get down there, they learn the hard way that those feral warriors that they're sawing being done up are done up a lot more than they thought. Effectively pseudo space marine level. I would put them maybe almost thunder warrior-esque. And they're not just good at melee, they're also good at ranged combat because the astral claws were hidden in the area and training them. So this great attack that they thought was going to wipe out this problematic world turns on its head. And the Minotaurs and the salamanders are like on the back foot, for lack of a better phrase. Eventually, the Minotaurs and the salamanders get to the central part, though. They take massive losses and they get into the central complex. Once they break into the central complex, that's where they discover the true, really kind of depravity that the astral claws had come down to. In this, they find a ton of stolen gene seed taken from the Imperial Space Marines. So they were stealing the gene seed from salamanders, from minotaurs, from all of them. And they made a laboratory, and they're effectively creating pseudo space marines.
Well, they're doing these
prisoners.
Yeah, they're doing these amalgamation, these abominations of space marine and anything I can get my hands on and genetically slap in. With, they don't really go into it, but there's no way this isn't wild sorcery also going into this.
It's horrifying. And so they grab what they can here and they leave.
It's also wild sorcery. It's a huge heresy too. This gets everybody fired up.
I'm not really clear if they actually defeated the forces in Shaprus or if they left. That was a part when I read it, I'm not 100% on, but all I know is they take it and they leave. They make the translation to warp. While in the warp, the salamander ship itself runs into a really bad warp storm and gets stuck. So they have to translate back out of the warp.
This is 100% Chaos God, not cool, Gan, not cool. Because they get a warp storm that goes, you guys need to get off the expressway right now. And what's outside the expressway, John?
Oh, the Astro Claws and the Executioner fleets.
They're standing there waiting for him.
Yeah. And just look up and go, oh.
Not cool, dude. Not cool. Yeah.
What happens next is the executioners actually get to the ship first. They board it, and the executioners come take the ship, and they tell the salamanders, they offer them a deal. They say, we're going to offer you what's called the rights of surrender. Under this, we will take you out of the war zone. But if we do this, you have to agree to no longer fight in this war. You're not going to surrender to us. You're just going to leave. It's the old, you don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. The salamanders accept this. But while they start moving that way, out of nowhere, the astral claws attack the vessel and actually come into the vessel, and they start looting for gene seed, like for the reason we just described. The executioners are watching us saying, hey, these guys just offered the right
to surrender. Huge dishonor.
Attack them. This is huge. So now the executioners attack the astral claws, and they start having this big fight inside of it, which I do find kind of funny. These two are fighting, and it's that scene in the movie where like the two bad guys are fighting and the good guys just go, so do we just sneak out now?
Yeah.
And that's what, and the salamanders are effectively just
salamanders just go, nothing to see here, just going to walk away slowly.
Yeah. They're just like, all right. And then they actually escape. But what's, and this is going to matter more later, when the salamanders get back to the Imperium, they tell them all the stuff they just discovered with the stolen gene seed, all these things. But more importantly, they tell them, hey, the executioners are not heretics. The executioners offered us the rights of surrender, and they honored it, and they fought with their allies to defend us with this. That's going to come up later. But let's get back to the secessionists, because now it's no longer plural. It's secessionists.
It also, I love that Euron Blackheart puts out a message to the entire system, Lord Humongous from Road Warrior style.
Oh, this is great.
Nobody escapes alive, I promised you.
Yes. His whole recorded message comes out claiming the astral claws are no longer the subject of the Imperium of Mankind. This is now, they are now truly seceding. They are independent. They are full-blown heretics. And then he moves to enact this brutal campaign of control, telling the astral claws pacify every single world. And the stories here are gross, where the astral claws enact rules where if a citizen of one of the worlds looks a space marine in the eye, they will be blinded. If they do, they're basically, they're torturing them. There's people up on heads on spikes, all that stuff. Now, the issue with that, though, is that as angry as he is, the Imperium are furious now, because now they know they are fighting chaos. And it's one of their own became chaos. Because the thing is, the people who turned to chaos 10,000 years ago, obviously they want to kill them. But someone turned to chaos last week, you're almost more angry about that. So they decide, all right, we're going. The first place they target is Piraeus, which is a world on the edge of the system. It's heavily fortified, but it gives the Imperium a route into the Badab sector. Because I think it had to do with, it's got a really nice, like, warp jump is right there. There's a kind of a clean path.
I was just saying, they make it a point. Because as usual, these planets aren't stationary. So you always wonder about, we had to go this certain way. You're like, this is orbiting a sun, man. There's a lot of space. But yeah, the whole point of it was there was supposed to be a nice warp jump exit.
So the Imperium brings a full six companies to this battle. They warp in and they just go after it. They attack the world. Once they hit the world, though, because it's going pretty well. And then they get a little closer and a little bit closer. And then the astral claws launch their counterattack. Because the defenses they have were almost too much for the Imperial naval force, like their defensive force field. So they had to use a space marine assault on the planet to actually get anywhere. Once they get there, that's when the hidden orbital guns, because again, scanning from space didn't work. Like, six pages for it being perfect, by the way.
Yeah, I was about to say, everything's going perfect. Also, these guns are hidden, but they're explained to just be gigantic. So, scanning the planet could have been Ted looking out and went, hey, man, there's a gun right there. Oh, there's another one right there. There's another one right there. You're like, man, I'm so glad we have Ted looking out the window as opposed to our high-tech scanners.
And at the same time, while this conflict now explodes on the planet, Huron appears behind everybody. Huron and his whole fleet warp in on the backside because, again, GW writing. And so now this whole big battle blows up. And if you want to read this, guys, it's like 20 pages. It is well written, but it's 20 pages of just
fun. It's actually really fun.
Fighting. It is very fun, but I can't tell as well as it's written. But the part that matters is that Huron and Cullen, for no reason, so that the two heads of the two armies somehow end up fighting each other. At no point did Napoleon fight any leader of the Prussians, the English, or anyone hand-to-hand. He was always in the back. That's what you do. But no, these guys went up front, and Cullen and Huron get into a fight. At one point, Huron, I believe it's a power clause, Cullen barely survives, and blah, 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 blah. So, then they go their separate ways. Huron goes back to the Badab sector, and Cullen has to lick his wounds and get the Imperial forces ready to go. Sort of. Because the challenge that happens now is, as this war has progressed, they've successfully whittled down the secessionists from 4 to 1. The secessionists are holding a very small sector. It's just the Badab sector. And they've proven that the secessionists are actually heretics. So everything here, you know, checks a box of go time. But the problem is that this is the exact same moment that the rest of the Imperium really catches fire. There are no reinforcements left. And so they are told, basically,
figure it out yourselves.
Yeah, and go deal with this. And so the Astral Claws at the same time also realize, this is the end, guys. But we can take a bunch of them with us. And they start fortifying Badab even further and further. Now, we're at that moment where you have to do something. They can't just surround them. They've got to go kill Huron. He is a heretic. And I hate the writing that occurs next with a passion of a thousand suns. They're going to go attack Badab, and they realize they have to get rid of the Ring of Steel. And the Ring of Steel is an impenetrable fortress that no one could ever get past, except bad guys half the bad guy. And Huron is convinced that someone's going to betray him. And the entirety of the Ring of Steel, I guess, is controlled by one.
I like this story quite a bit, but I do hate this part, because the entirety of the Ring of Steel is effectively on one TV remote control. I don't even know if it's TV remote control. It might be on like your fob for your car.
That was my fault. It was one BlackBerry.
Yeah.
He's ready to go. And the guy with the BlackBerry is just sitting on, not on a planet, but actually on one of the stations that are part of the Ring of Steel. But the issue is, it's a very well-defended Ring of Steel. I really hate this part of the story. I'm sorry, guys. It's a really well-defended Ring of Steel. And if we try to bring an Imperial Forest there, it'll kill us. So what do we do? I've got it. The Firehawks have a star fortress called the Raptorus Rex, which is actually kind of a cool name. The Raptorus Rex, it's not quite as big as the Phalanx, but it's one of those type things. It comes from the golden age of technology that was recovered, yada, yada. So the Admech take a piece of a star and link it to the back of it, I guess, on a chain. And the Raptorus Rex goes hurtling into the system and then takes a sharp left turn, what's it, Fast and Furious style, and throws a star fragment at the space station, which destroys the space station, kills the dude on it. And
also, why is he there?
The BlackBerry. Yeah, holding the BlackBerry.
Be anywhere, literally anywhere else, man.
Yeah.
You're like, man, if only that guy was just not there and he was on a couch somewhere else watching that.
So
he could be watching that on a comm going, oh, man, did you see what happened to that fortress? Oh, man, that was crazy.
Guess I'm going to blow it up, pressing these three buttons and success. But that's how this thing goes. So the Ring of Steel, which we were like, this is maybe, I think it's about 200 or 300 pages of story, this whole story takes up. And that period of time, the impenetrability of the Ring of Steel is brought up at least 30 times. And yeah, it's not impenetrable at all. Someone hit the off button and went womp womp.
Sometimes all you got to do is you got to drive your car while it's on a parachute And, you know, you just do your thing.
Well, how did they make 7 of those movies?
Ugh, there's so many more.
They're so bad.
Anyway, yeah.
They're so bad. All right. But let's get to The Fall of Badab. So The Fall of Badab is, again, well-written, cool stories. If you really like Space Marine Conflict, read them. As I said, don't get them for free, guys. That would be the wrong thing to do. And you should not do those things because they are under, what is it called, intellectual property protections. So please don't download them for free.
And me.
I know. Now, the next part of the story is the invasion of Badab itself. And I really want to focus on one main part of it, which is the Carcharodonts. Because, oh, this story is awesome. Badab has a bunch of defenses anywhere, and those defenses require energy. And most of the energy in Imperial colonies comes from large reactors built near the cores of the planet. They use the energy from the core to power them. I don't think it's steam power, but it might be, for all I know. And the Carcharodonts are told by Lord Commander Cullen to attack the planet's infrastructure so as to prevent the people of Badab from formatting any form of counterattack. That was his big feat.
I feel that there was...
Space Marines.
Yeah. Sorry. I just... In my mind, he was telling this. He's like, I don't want them to be able to get a kind of... formatting any sort of counterattack. And then he had... 2 more pages of battle plan, and the Carcharodonts walked out right after he said that and went, got it, and left. And they was like, but wait, this is how we're going to do it. And they went, nah, we got it. Because if we just take all of it out, they won't be able to do that, right?
Cullen said, I want you to disable their infrastructure so they can't mount a counterattack. And they went, cool, so remove the infrastructure completely. And by infrastructure, I mean a lot more. So let's get into this part is kind of funny. So this epic battle is going on, which you guys should read. We're talking about, you've got Titans, you've got Dreadnoughts, you've got everything fighting on the surface, massive pitched battles everywhere. And the Carcharodonts just infiltrate the hive cities and just go basement floor button on the elevator and go down there and go, let's just keep going down from here.
Oh, they do this until video game style. It's so cool, though, because they're like, all you have to do is disable all of the reactors. And they just go, click, 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 and just go. Yeah. And also, if you're going to be a bummer if you're just working down in the Hive City and platoons of Marines start running at you. You're like, I'm on shift 8. What? Oh, man.
Yeah, I'm on swing shift this week. What's happening? Oh, no. And the Carcharodonts are doing stuff. They're like, hey, if you do that, it's going to make the reactor blow up. And they're looking at going, yeah, I know. I'm a space marine. So they're just effectively switching all of the reactors on the planet to overload. Meanwhile, this epic battle is happening above them, in which at one point Huron, now calling himself Huron the Blackheart, takes a Melta to the, I would say face, but it's like the whole half his body.
Body, yeah.
Just gets melted. And while they're fighting, though, the entire planet starts groaning and moving around. And all the people on the planet, and it's just breaking apart because all of those reactors the Carcharodonts had hit start overreacting and ripping the planet from the inside out. Where's Superman from? What's the planet Superman?
Krypton.
I can't think of it. Krypton. Oh, it is Krypton. Yeah. Yeah. This is effectively the fall of Krypton occurs.
And the best part is this is, yes, they kill a little bit of collateral damage, but it's so messed up because they do make it a point. We forgot to say that when we were first doing it. They're just cutting down all the workers to make sure that they don't fix what they're below.
Oh, yeah. They also killed everybody. And so the Carcharodonts, by the way, have finished their task and all have already left the planet. Now all the space marines, the traders, even the citizens are just beelining for ships to get off the planet because, again, it's Krypton. It's falling apart.
But they also didn't tell anybody.
Oh, they told no one during this. So and what I love about this is like the whole planet just implodes, like trillions, quadrillions of people die. You lose dozens, if not more, of space marines, tens of thousands of Imperial troops, Titans, all this stuff's gone. And the Inquisition's sitting there after the battle, and the Carcharodonts just come wandering under the bridge like, oh, hey, what's up, guys? And they're looking at them going, just pointing out the window like, what did you do? And the Carcharodons look the Inquisition dead in the eye and go, so we did that thing where we were fighting by your side and we need to resupply. So is it cool if we just go kidnap a bunch of people? Because those writs I gave you earlier said we could.
Also, and like, when I say tiny people, I mean millions.
And I just believe that there's a window behind him while he's doing it. And the window behind it, you just see the planet breaking apart. Like, it's just, and so they were, they were granted, all right, go do your red tie. They gave him some of the Mantis warrior worlds, go nuts. And they went out there, raided them, and then just left the entire system. But that takes us to the final bit, which is the aftermath of the war.
Don't skip your best line of the entire cast. In the notes we have, they leave the planet, the system, likely to the joy of all around.
That's true. Yeah, the Carcharodon leaving was definitely, everyone was like, oh, thank God.
Nobody had a tear in their eye. We'll miss you.
I could see someone turn the Minotaurs and be like, no, I'm glad you guys are here. Like, after the Carcharodons left.
You know, I had a chance to compare, and you guys are totally normal.
But yeah, let's get to the aftermath of the war, because that's one of the more important pieces. So after the war is over, the Imperium holds all the legions accountable. The Astral Claws are branded heretic, and they're to be hunted down without mercy. The Mantis warriors were placed on a penitent crusade to regain their honor, which they are still in the middle of. So by, where have we crossed M42 yet? Or are we still 990?
We're in 42.
Yeah, we've crossed M42. Yeah, so we're in 42 now. And they are still on this crusade. The Lamenters were also placed on a penitent crusade, but their crusade took them into High Fleet Kraken. And they survived, but they're down to less than 300 Marines. That technically meant that their crusade was over, but the belief is that the Lamenters will not make it. There's just too few, and they've lost so much gene seed that they will eventually die off. The exception is the Executioners, which is actually pretty cool. As we mentioned before, the Executioners fought to defend the Salamanders when the Astral Claws attacked. And so, whereas the Mantis Warriors and the Lamenters, as part of their Penitent Crusade, they lost all their worlds. So all of their recruiting worlds were all gone. The Executioners were also put on a Penitent Crusade, but their worlds were held in trust by the Salamanders.
Yeah, so because they're G's, and they vouch for them during the Tribunal.
Exactly. And that's cool. So what happens is, they have actually now finished their Penitent Crusade, and the worlds that they held before have been returned to them by the Salamanders. So the Executioners are now starting to quote unquote thrive. But the most important one is Huron himself. Huron survived taking a Melta to himself, and he actually healed up in 3 days fully. And the reason he did that is because Huron is a Chaos Lord now. Full blown, he is 100% Chaos. But he's odd because he's not focused on taking out the Imperium. He still wants to conquer Maelstrom. And he's doing it for him, because he's Chaos Undivided. So he's just doing it for Chaos.
The love of the game.
Yeah, and so him and what's left of the Astral Claws form a new chapter called the Red Corsairs, which is Chaos Space Marine Pirates. I do enjoy one of these armies, by the way. These ones are. But what I love about him is that him and his like band of merry men are roaming around Maelstrom, preying on vessels and conquering worlds. But if a Space Marine can be as a full chapter down to a single
he's falls picked to up chaos, individual guys.
Yeah,
he definitely has a direct line, because he shows up when someone's, whether it's a platoon, a lead, or whatever, as soon as someone's about to fall to chaos, weirdly, yep. Huron will, hey, man, what's going on? I heard you needed a ride.
Yeah, but it's cool. But that's why the Red Corsairs are this really like hodgepodge. It's a true pirate fleet of anyone who wants to join is welcome to join. And I'm a huge fan. So it's cool. And by the way, the fleet is massive. It's actually one of the largest forces in Chaos. They did capture Gilliman for a bit. But anyway, but with that, I think that's where I want to end. I think that's a good coverage of the Badab War. I hope this was fun for all of you. We've been doing a lot of human and centric, even the Votan are human. So next week, we're going to do something more Xenos related. The problem is I haven't even started writing next week's episode yet, so I don't know what it's going to be.
We have talked about it.
talked about it. I think we're going to go Drukhari, but I don't want to commit all the way because the way I am is I'll start writing something and I will left turn out of nowhere on Brad. So we'll write it. So I don't really know what we're covering next week, but we will be there.
Now, that makes Brad happier than doing a bunch of research on something and then having John tell me that I wrote 13 sentences on that and went somewhere completely different.
Left turn. Yeah, I'm very good at left turn midway through my notes. But more importantly, with that, we hope you all enjoyed this. John Barsotti, Brad Chester.
This guy.
See you all next week. Have you tried going back and playing the games you played as a kid?
We're talking nostalgia overload, fun facts, and seeing if we can remember how to beat games we haven't played in 30 years.
Come join us. Retro Recall is all about nostalgia and reliving those years of zero responsibility.
Each episode, John makes me play a game from our youth, and I challenge him to do something in that game, and then the loser has to try one of the worst games ever made.
It's fun, it's terrible, but most of all, it's a look back at simpler times.
In the first episode, we try Double Dragon 2, and let's just say that John is still having nightmares about some of the terrible games he had to play.
You say that, but I'm not the only one. The Ghoul School?
Dear God.
Check out Retro Recall on YouTube and your favorite audio podcast platforms.
There are links in the main show description, or just search Retro Recall.
Retro Recall. Come join us. Games are always better with friends. Retro Recall.